lights out, and away we go. What a match day this was.
Flash of fire, progress to God, where no doctor can remove me. If I'm buried beneath the sun, but the angels will receive. Let me go, boys, let me go, boys. Let me go down in the mud, it's all a dry. This line was always theirs, was the proud line of a fetish. It belongs to us and them, not to any of the others. Let them go, boys, let them go, boys. Let them go down in the mud, it's all a dry.
Podcasting from Studio 2520, somewhere near Akron, Ohio, and live via the paid subscription of Zencastr, the campus of Otterbein University, Westerville, Ohio. This is Tackling the Chicane. So, as promised, our lead up to St. Paddy's Day, the Pogues, an English or Anglo-Irish Celtic punk band fronted by Shane McGowan. That's what I have on that, basically. I'm sure you can spin a little color there. The band started playing off in London pubs and clubs and became known for their energetic and raucous live shows. Took a dip into this band on your suggestion and went through that very best album. And it is a very frequented playlist at this point.
Yeah, the Pogues are someone that, or a group that I had discovered basically through the sad news that Shane McGowan had passed. This was in December of 2023. And as someone that's pretty in tune with the, I guess, the goings-ons and British and Irish culture just through watching soccer, obviously, and then just a general interest in the region. This is a band that, you know, you'd kind of just have to know. That album, which you heard the title track from, If I Should Fall from Grace with God, came out in 1988, and it sort of saw a bit of a stylistic change for the band, who were pretty pretty firmly in that sort of, as you said, that Celtic Irish punk scene. And they kind of expanded their sound into some other regional type music. So you hear some Spanish influence, some Latino influenced music, some Turkish influence. But yeah, without getting too deep into the weeds, if that's an album that I can recommend it, that is one you have to spin. Also, their album that came out before that, Rum, Sodomy, and the Lash in 1985, very good as well.
Nice. So I believe there's a track, and I might have the title slightly misread, but there's an Irish pub everywhere is one of the tracks.
Maybe on
they kind of talk about, like you said, in Turkey there's an Irish pub.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so there you go. We will lead up to St. Paddy's Day with mostly Irish intros for the podcast.
Awesome. Always something I love talking about love the music from that part of the world, that's for sure. But fully loaded podcast for this go around, as we have got a race in a season to predict. Finally, it seems like in Bahrain, we're going to go through firstly our predictions of the Constructors' Championship and get into detail there. I've been promised some rather, shall we say, flamboyant predictions from Mr. Barreto that we're going to dissect. And then, of course, a little race preview heading into the first race week of the season. And then on the soccer side of the show, it looks like maybe Celtic have finally turned a page in terms of form, a very exciting match, shall we say, in Motherwell from the past weekend to discuss. So lots to get into. Why don't we get rolling with our first segment here? And I'm not totally sure the extent to which you predicted, but I do have my, I have all of my teams ranked how I think they are going to finish. So,
yeah, I have a 1-10 as well. And okay. I think the best way to, maybe do you want to start from 10 and go up?
I think it would be, I think it would be better to go up from 10. Just
sure. Yeah.
So,
with that, what is your 10th Constructors prediction for F1 2024?
Yes. So, obviously, someone has to end up at the bottom of the barrel. Of course, in F1, that's not really a terrible thing because you're still basically printing money. But, yeah, my team... 10th place, last place for 2024, my prediction, that goes to Haas. And to give just a little bit of color, it seems from the team camp and from what we've seen so far, testing and now two practice sessions in Bahrain from today, they just don't have much speed, do they? Not much speed to talk about, and the driver lineup of Hulkenberg and Magnussen, I don't think those are guys that are really going to be able to push this car beyond their limits. So I have Haas finishing 10th.
So obviously we agree.
Okay.
I also have Haas finishing 10th. We'll see what the season brings, but I haven't been delighted by what I've seen in preseason practice with new team principal. I thought maybe we might get some kind of electrification, maybe just a glimmer, a seed of hope. But I think this team finishes 10th.
Yeah. One thing I will say, like, I don't think this is going to be like they're just totally, completely off the pace, like just back markers the whole season. I just think, especially to start this season, it's going to be a little rough. It's going to be a little rough. So,
yeah.
Haas 10th. Looks like we agree there. I'll let you say your 9th place team first.
So I had 9th place. Williams.
Okay.
Mostly for the fact that I think they have a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see a huge step up or step down. I don't have any figures from last year in front of me. My brain's a little fried from
That's all right. You're not being graded.
Yeah, I think okay. Williams is going to be somewhere around position 9th, although I would like to see them maybe a bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
Um,
do you, I kind of just want to ask this question. Do you think Logan Sargent holds this team back in any way this season?
Yes.
Yeah,
I do. I would love to see an American driver make a splash. I think based on what we saw last year, that's going to be kind of a stretch. It's going to be a long shot for them. Although Alexander Albon is super talented.
Yeah.
And who knows how this is going to unfold. But, mm-hmm. you know, as we make predictions, I have to go with gut feeling.
Yeah.
And in the 8 or so minutes that I put my list together where the podcast started, it just made sense to me to put them in the 9th position for constructors. What say you?
Okay, so first disagreement of the night here. I will say, just as a little teaser, I'm a bit more bought in on the Williams project than it seems like you are. But for my 9th place team, I have Sauber, or Kick Sauber. Again, this is more of a performance from the car. Doesn't seem like it's going to be all that great this year. And I think this is maybe the weakest driver lineup of any team. Valtteri Bottas seems like he hasn't given a shit about being an F1 since he left Mercedes, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And Zhou Guan Yu, Logan Sargeant, if he improves this year, I'm pretty confident in saying that Zhou Guan Yu is the worst driver in F1 at the moment. But
I think that F1 puts a lot of stake in making sure that there's certain representation by each continent or country. Obviously, at this point, when you get to your racing career, Joe's not there because he's a bad driver. But yeah, he really hasn't given us a whole lot to speak about over the last several seasons. But I can get with that for sure. And I think we're gonna probably be really close in 8-9.
Okay. Maybe.
So yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so my 8th place team, I don't know. Maybe this is a bit of a curveball, but I actually have Alpine sitting in 8th. And again, this is sort of a theme here, performance issues. This is a team that looks like maybe they're at least their initial product, because really we can go off of what people are saying, testing, and 2 practice sessions. It looks like they've underdeveloped this car a little bit, and this is maybe something, and I know you can touch on because you watch all the races the same as I do. Gasly and Ocon are teammates that on track feud like no other. And that is not really a team dynamic you want. There's no real clear balance of power there, no clear number one. And honestly, I think that hurts an F1 team more than it helps it. So that's what I have Alpine in 8th.
Okay, so my 8th team prediction was Kick Sauber.
Okay.
Not too far off there. We just kind of talked about Kick Sauber and their driving lineup of Joe and Bottas. I don't think we're too far apart there. I will say this. Actually dove into season 6 of Drive to Survive. And also, I'm just going to play off this a little bit, but the NASCAR Netflix series, which is pretty much scripted the same way. Here's what we need as fans. And I have it on the app, but I still think it's being regulated. I want the what the fuck calls. Because there are a lot of what the hell is happening calls.
Yeah.
Between driver and team pit boss or you know, I think F1 could lend itself to open mics, because I want to hear when the drivers aren't happy about how the car is performing or issues like that. So I think that gives us a way better look into how these GPs develop instead of just the same kind of salt and pepper talk back and forth. We just need open mics. I want to hear, I want to hear the struggle.
Yeah, I get that. I get that for sure. So we are now on to the seventh place position. So if you want to go ahead and give your prediction for seventh place this season.
So I have seventh place firmly seated to the RB team, former AlphaTauri. Daniel Ricciardo will drive for Red Bull again.
Okay.
At some point.
Big, bold prediction here.
Yuki Tsunoda is a master of his domain. He's a great driver. But again, we don't see the solid finishes or passes or gains during races from Yuki.
You'd like to see more points finishes from him.
100%. Yeah. So, I think that's pretty strong, though. I mean, listen, this is the red-headed stepchild of the Red Bull team.
Yeah.
But the distance between the two teams, I mean, what if you look at all of this stuff on paper, you know, why is it not possible for them to be closer to Red Bull?
I don't know. Tinfoil hat probably says they just don't want it to be like that. They don't want the competition, but I don't know. I do think that, and I'll just give it away right now, my seventh place team, also RB, I do think they are going to see a pretty significant step up in performance this year. I think Daniel Ricciardo will be a nice steady presence for that team that they didn't have last year with Nyck de Vries. And if he's, you know, not scoring points weekly, but in with a shout per week. I like Yuki Tsunoda. I think he's a great driver. You hope to see quite a few more points finishes, to be honest. And I think you will see that with a much improved car from what we saw last year, where on race pace and one lap qualifying speed, they were pretty much rooted to the back. So I think this team will be a lot better next year or this year.
Right. So that brings us to
sixth
position. And in sixth position, I have Alpine.
Okay.
I think Gasly is on the precipice of making some really good showings this year. He has to.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy who's kind of kicked around a bit. Ocon, shown a little talent, X and Y. But what this really comes down to is the car. You know, but we've got, obviously they're well funded.
Yeah.
Backed by American dollars.
All sorts of celebrity dollars.
Yeah, exactly. Cell phone company guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's never a question of the funding with them. And you got the Renault factory team, which is what Alpine is. It's just, seems to me like there's a little under development. And again, the driver lineup, I don't really think Ocon is it, to be honest. I think Gasly has a much higher ceiling than Ocon. Also, in again, you know this, Ocon is like a constant bomb scare. I mean, how many penalties does he receive a season? It feels like a shitload.
Yeah, and those are penalties in F1 are definitely something that you can avoid if you're just aware of where you're at on the track, and a lot of them are exceeding track limits.
Yeah.
Ridiculous, maybe pit penalties in some way, shape, and form. But yeah, at some point you really just have to dial in. And I haven't quite seen that from this team. But you know, I have hope for my top five.
Okay. I'll give my sixth position away before we move into the top five, top half of the table here. And you probably figured out by process of elimination, but it's Williams. So I would think that's going to be the biggest discrepancy for us, is that where we think Williams is, three position swing there. I am kind of on the Williams hype train, I won't lie. I do think the car that they're going to bring out this year is going to turn some heads. I think Albon is going to be, knowing that a Mercedes ride will be available, I think that's going to motivate him to really take some strides this season. And what the hell will Logan Sargeant do? I don't know. You would think it wouldn't be any worse than what happened last year. So I expect him not really to set the world on fire, but 10, 15 points maybe this year. And overall, I do think Williams have the car to beat the teams I put below them. So that is my sixth place prediction.
And I like that. I obviously didn't have quite the same faith, but that's because the Albon versus Sargeant anchor. We've seen Sargeant tear cars up like no one else.
And I will admit, this rides pretty heavily on Sargeant improving.
Sure. Because Albon's strong.
Yeah.
And but yeah, I'm down with a sixth place for Williams. I don't know. If I had to rank in my head the teams that I would like to see do well this year, obviously Haas, please just come out of the basement somehow. But this is our second best chance with an American driver to make a little bit of a splash. But we shall see.
All right, so into the top half here, fifth place, who do you got?
I have Aston Martin.
Okay.
In the number five position. I mean, this is a team where Stroll has, under the guidance of his superior, has become a much better racing driver. You know, and Fernando always seems to be in the mix around four or five-ish place in these races. Dare I say, they they might take a podium this year.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet for sure.
Yeah, but I think Stroll is much improved. I mean, over the course of the last couple of seasons that we've watched, I mean, this kid went from kind of a, well, his dad owns the team, so that's why he's in the car. But, you know, I think he fought through some adversity last year and really between the two of them, Alonso coaching and taking the lead, I think maybe this could be a five position team.
Okay. My fifth place team is also Aston Martin, and I pretty much echo what you say, although I'm definitely not quite as high on Stroll as you are. I still think with a better driver lineup, Aston Martin maybe could set their sights a little further down the road, but I think fifth place is probably where they land, just off of the teams I see ahead of them and driver lineup. Performance seems like it's kind of what they left off with at the end of the year, which was a car that could from time to time battle for podiums. So I expect that to continue. Although I don't think they get off to the rip roaring start that they did last year. So I think fifth is, I think that is exactly where they will land.
Okay. So position four, I have Ferrari.
Wow. Okay.
And only because I think the kind of blender that we put that team in with driver changes, obviously Lewis Hamilton is coming next year.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Sainz is going to be, I believe he's going to be unseated. And
I mean,
no one's ever actually said which one's going to go, whether it's Leclerc or Sainz.
It's pretty much Sainz from what we can tell.
And that speaks to our next season, where does Sainz land? But, I think they're going to struggle as they have. Traditionally, we have at the top of the list is engine failure, and then we have pit stop and or tire strategy, which has kind of been the ghost in the machine for this team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw Ferrari right at number four.
Okay. My number four team is Mercedes. This is a team that I just don't think the dynamic is going to be there in terms of culture and chemistry between Hamilton and Russell. You will probably see, especially as the season marches on, a great emphasis on George Russell being put in this team and Lewis Hamilton sort of put on the back burner. I can imagine some scuffles between these two guys on track that could potentially hinder performance. And also, I don't have a whole lot of faith in Mercedes while this current regulation of car is here, basically. I think they still don't really quite understand what's going on with this regulation. And I see three teams ahead of them that have better driver lineups, in my opinion, and I think we'll get more performance out of their cars. So Mercedes for me are finishing fourth.
All right. So we're not too polarized here with our choices.
Not too terribly. I was a little surprised with your Ferrari P4, but I digress.
I also think that Ferraris and Mercedes could be either or. And yeah, so that's why I chose, based on performance last year, I honestly think that for my number three pick is McLaren.
Okay. Unsurprising.
Unsurprising, but possible, right?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think that this is a team that, with Piastri and Norris, you know, this is all comes down to, in the constructor standings, the points. And I think that this team has an absolute chance at P3.
Mm-hmm. I would agree, because I also put them number three. I think you never really know, because it kind of seems like they have a habit of putting out a donkey at the beginning of the season that they have to constantly build towards making it faster. So I'm kind of banking on them not doing that this season. However, I do think Norris, Lando Norris, and Oscar Piastri are one of the better duos in F1, and I just think the chemistry between those two is going to allow them to consistently be better than Mercedes this year. So I would agree, P3 for McLaren.
Okay. That brings us to the second position in the constructors' standings. And what say you for that?
So I'm going with Ferrari for P2. I think they are sort of the best of the rest by a somewhat decent margin, just from a speed perspective. With the car that they've produced, it looks like that might be the case. And also, Charles Leclerc, I think, is, outside of Max Verstappen, the best driver in F1. And I do expect him to win at least one race this season. And Carlos Sainz, maybe with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, who knows? So I think, barring some Ferrari-ness in terms of debacles that seem to follow this team around, I do think they will be comfortably second place this season.
Fair enough. Can't argue with that, but my number two prediction is Mercedes. And from what I have seen from Lewis Hamilton, although making the jump next year to Ferrari, I think this is a golden boy who wants to go out on the highest possible precipice, should we say. Mm-hmm. I see Mercedes being number two. Russell is he's a bulldog.
Yeah.
He's going to fight. If the car is correct, I don't think there's really any stopping them from being number two in constructors.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that happening for sure. We'll have a better sense, obviously, with all these picks once we get a few races under our belt. But I do think Russell is going to have a pretty solid season, and we'll see what we get out of Hamilton. I don't think this is a guy that's just going to phone it in just because he's leaving. So, yeah, I can definitely see a scenario in which Mercedes are P2 for sure.
It's a really close race in my mind between McLaren and Mercedes is who's going to take that P2 position. Mm-hmm. not to get ahead of ourselves, but I mean, we only have whatever your P2 prediction is. And then we also have the P1 prediction, which I'm sure we're.
Yeah. If you can't tell, we'll just get to it now. The P1, Red Bull. And by Red Bull, I basically just mean Max Verstappen, because I think Sergio Perez is a bit of a fucking donkey, if I'm being completely honest. This is Max Verstappen against the rest of F1. And he, at the moment, I still think is good enough to pretty much single-handedly win a title for Red Bull this year.
Well, and F1 would not like to admit this, but preseason testing was fairly dominant.
Yeah. And it seems like
a really fast Red Bull car again. The only inkling that somebody might unseat is possible weird things that happen, and they do. Mm-hmm. So, but I can't help but say that, you know, this, and not because of Perez, obviously.
Yeah.
But we'll see. As we always do, we always hope. Race one coming up soon. Mm-hmm. Like to see kind of a cock up by Red Bull, but
it's going to be the Verstappen show. We know that. I don't think he wins. What was it? 18 races this season, but it'll still be dominance from him, no doubt about it. What is going to make it more interesting, which I pretty much alluded to, is there's, in my mind, at least 4 or 5 drivers better than Sergio Perez in F1 right now. So that will, I don't think it's going to be a total runaway, but Red Bull is still going to win the title. So there you have it.
Yeah.
And that pretty much, that brings a close to the constructor standing predictions from us.
Right. So, coming up very shortly, we have the Bahrain Grand Prix coming very soon. Practice starts, I believe, in just a few hours from now.
P3. So we had 2 practice sessions today. Correct. As we recorded.
Go to circuit stats here quickly. First GP 2004, 57 lap race, course length just a little over 5 kilometers, race distance 308, lap record Pedro de la Rosa in 2005 ran the quickest lap at Bahrain. Have no idea who he is. I don't know if you do or not.
I've not heard of that name, to be honest.
Yeah. But so here we go. Here we go. Yep. For the kickoff of the F1 season. And we will have a full show in a week's time to recap that race.
So I know you mentioned something about Barreto's bold predictions. So I don't know if you wanted to run through that briefly before we move on to the next part of the show.
Yeah. So number one, prediction is Lando Norris finishes in the top 3 in the championship.
Is this yay or nay?
Well, it can be.
No, not for me. Leclerc 2 and either Perez or Hamilton probably 3 for me.
Okay, so while Lando Norris didn't quite achieve my prediction of a maiden Grand Prix win in 2023, he did secure a career best haul of 7 podiums, 6 of them in position number 2. This is Barreto's commentary here. So I don't know. I think Norris is a strong contender and could potentially finish in the top 3 in the Drivers' Championship.
Yeah, no, he definitely can. It's just I'm not wholly convinced that McLaren can put a driver in the top 3 at this juncture in F1, but possible, definitely possible.
Fair enough. So let's just go to prediction number 2 here. Scrolling past the picture of Lando. Lewis Hamilton will return to the top step, which means he shall win a race.
Oh, win a race. I think that actually could happen. I think Mercedes have the car that has enough speed to, if Red Bull were to fuck up one weekend, I actually do think that is possible. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that prediction. Aston Martin will win a GP. They will
no,
win.
That's a GP. That is an absolute negatory unless 4 or 5 vehicles get struck by lightning during any race and blow up and cannot continue.
So Barreto thinks that had Aston Martin fitted intermediate wet tires rather than slick medium dry weather tires to Fernando's car in Monaco last year, there was a very good chance that he could have emerged in the lead and gone on to win the GP. So, yeah, I guess possibly, but we could also, you know, it's a dice roll at this point.
Yeah, I just don't see how that happens, to be quite honest.
Prediction number 4 from Mr. Barreto. Williams will score a podium.
No. Also no. There's just too many good teams ahead of Williams. Again, unless there is a rather large crash or something of that nature, no, that's not happening.
I will say this about prediction number 4. Probably disagree, but would love to see it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see Williams be on the podium. And finally,
yeah, that'd be great.
AlphaTauri finally gets a P5 position. AlphaTauri RB.
Yeah.
It's a P5.
That one's possible. I think that is possible with Ricciardo or Tsunoda. I think one race, one of them is definitely capable of a top 5. I don't think that's all that crazy, to be honest.
Yeah. So all there right. You go. Predictions and position predictions, and I'll try to circle this on my notepad here. And in maybe mid-season, we can re-evaluate what constructor standings you and I had predicted for the year.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Well, that is going to do it for the F1. A little bulkier than normal, but
we're coming big segments. Up to the big first race and
the big show for sure.
Yeah, the big show.
All right, so we will go ahead and move on into the soccer side of things, and it's going to be a Scottish-focused soccer segment here as we're staring down what is essentially the greatest, maybe one of the greatest title races we've seen in Scotland for at least a while. If you're looking at the standings now, Rangers on 70 points, Celtic on 68 in second, and goal difference very similar. We are going to cover Motherwell versus Celtic, which occurred over the weekend. But since then, both teams have played and won, so it hasn't really changed the standings in terms of point differential. But basically, we're at a juncture where every single game matters, which is obviously where you want to be. But Celtic, in this particular match against Motherwell, safe to say, didn't make it super easy on themselves.
I was quite saddened in the first half of this match. I didn't think that they had, when I say they, I mean Celtic, had any chance just based on the style of play.
Mm-hmm.
Motherwell just looked very impressive with set pieces and ball possession, and Celtic is just kind of out there floundering. I have a note here, and this is well past the 43rd minute of the first half, because there wasn't a whole lot of anything to talk about, but I said they're just discombobulated.
Yes. You know,
so there was no passes. Passes that happened weren't accepted and charged up the field.
Mm-hmm.
It was just almost like they had numb feet.
Yeah, that is a great way to describe it. And my first note that I wrote down as we pretty much, as you wanted to almost black out during the first 30 minutes of this game or so. Celtic's bad run of form seems to be continuing. Stale, relatively toothless football from Celtic in the first half that keeps Motherwell involved. That's the big thing that really was setting me off recently, and I mean recently in terms of the past few weeks of Celtic football. There never seemed to be, when we had possession, a plan of what the hell they were going to do. It was just kind of bouncing these half-baked passes around, and you never really felt like it was going to lead to an opportunity, or that there was really any decisiveness in the players, which I think was really, really making it hard to watch this team play. And obviously we'll get into it, but things did turn around, and we will have to discuss Adam Ida, who seems to be Jesus Christ descended down onto Celtic Park. But why don't we just get into that Motherwell goal? Because I think it's really indicative of how that first half went, because they pretty much just played through Celtic like a hot knife through butter on this one.
Yeah, 43rd minute. Spital from Motherwell. Just a absolute missile.
Yeah.
The missile.
Yeah, that was one of the better goals you're going to see this season.
After 40-some odd minutes of play, I really, and I had lost all faith especially based on the way that this Celtic team had presented itself. I was like, oh, well, this is going to be a 1-0 match.
Mm-hmm.
The way they're playing right now, there's no way that they're going to equalize or even win this particular fixture. So, but there was great hope later, which we'll talk about.
So. Yeah. So just wanted to, again, Blair Spital, rocket of a shot. Callum McGregor, Celtic midfielder, sort of spun out of his boots there on a rather cheeky little move from the Motherwell player. Spital just gets his boot through it, gets everything on that ball. Nothing Joe Hart can really do there, although he comes up in a big moment in the second half, which, so at that juncture, let's look at the tape. So you have now, you're losing to Motherwell. You've dropped points in matches recently. Rangers are destroying everything in their path. And it's, you know, you're down in the title race. Things are just looking grim. You know, they're just looking bad. I don't know what was said in the locker room at halftime, whether it be from Brendan Rodgers, the manager, or perhaps the club captain, Callum McGregor. But since then, Celtic have played like there is not going to be a tomorrow. And you come out into the second half, and it's like a whole nother team just suited up in the uniform.
Yeah, so 51st minute, we have a really nice header from Ida.
Adam Ida.
Ida.
Yeah.
Sorry. 1-1 tie, and that was kind of gave me a little bit of a boost, at least.
Because yeah, we're
a few minutes in, and okay, let's go. And then my note under that was, I need to see a little bit more Carter Vickers.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that he was coming off of injury.
Mm-hmm. He has had some injury problems.
Yeah.
But
I felt like in the past he's given kind of a shot in the ass.
Absolutely.
The team.
So yeah,
they actually did end up putting him in at some point. I don't know if it was around that.
Yeah, it was shortly after that. Around the 60th minute, Navratsky comes off. He's a player that is essential to the success of Celtic at the moment. And we got to talk about Adam Ida, and I have a little bit more context now because I watched the first half of the match against Dundee yesterday, the midweek fixture. May or may not have illegally streamed that, but besides the point. So Celtic, of course, 7-1 winners in that one. So like I said, it seems like the first half of this was a wake-up call for this team, because since then they've just been on a tear. Adam Ida, he was brought in over the January transfer window from Norwich City in England. He's on loan, but man, oh man, I mean, he has just been a great injection of flavor and general. Just, we needed someone who could just put away chances, and he did that in this one with a beautiful header.
Yeah, so I have a note here in the 56th minute of this match that Hart made a fantastic save.
Yes, he did.
I don't exactly recall what that looked like, but
it was off of a Motherwell header, and it was point blank.
And then My next note is Maeda is really weak right now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree that?
I do. And that has been a problem for a while.
Every time this guy gets a chance or a foot on the ball, he cocks it up.
Yeah. And that has been true for a while.
Historically, this guy has also been one of the greatest players that we've seen, but I don't know. He's like off balance or something.
Yeah, right now. He is just, he's got a lead foot. That's for sure. And, you know, you would have no way of knowing this, but last night he's in classic Maeda fashion. He scored a goal he probably should have never scored from the tightest angle you've ever seen. So it's just like
he has moments.
He's a guy that scores goals that are just like, holy shit. And then when he has a point blank shot, he sends it into the second deck.
Yeah. I just had a weak note. Maeda is weak. Because every time that he got an opportunity, it seemed like he was like, it was just lead shoes, right?
Yeah, he's a little off and on to say the best. We got a lot of substitutions from Brendan Rodgers, and finally it seemed like he was making the right subs for a while now. It seems like, you know, Celtic are floundering, and then it's bring on fucking James Forrest or whatever, and he doesn't do anything. It seemed like the subs, Ida, obviously, and Yang, were actually, you know, making shit happen for once, which was very nice to see in this match.
Yeah, 82nd minute, O'Reilly to Scales with a really sweet header that got defended. And then, you know, we're still at this point at a draw, 1-1. And then, you know, 82 minutes go by, and you know you only have a little bit of time left on the clock.
Yeah.
We knew we had some overage here at plus 90. And then by some kind of Celtic miracle in the 94th, a Johnson cross to Ida again. And it was a very sweet goal. 2-1 Celtic.
One of the better goals you're going to see this season, not only because Alistair Johnston puts an absolute beauty of a ball into Adam Ida, but Ida makes this just super incisive run into the box, taps it home like a striker should. Seems like with this team, strikers tend to just blast balls into oblivion, but Ida just seems to have a great touch, it slots at home 2-1. Fans go nuts. Ida's been a player for Celtic for about 5 minutes, and it seems like he really loves the fan base. It helps. He is Irish, actually, so if you're Irish, usually you know a thing or two about Celtic Football Club, and he is someone I would, at this moment in time, not mind sticking around for the club.
So I was fine with 2-1.
Yeah.
And then in extra time, 97th minute, Yang to Palmer, and just another rocket. And then this was all but finished.
Absolutely, yeah.
When you look back on this match in the first half, I honestly thought we were going to take a kick in the ass.
It certainly looked like that. It certainly looked like that.
And then it just, I mean, it was second half was the most, one of the most enjoyable soccer matches that I had watched.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so boys are rolling.
Yeah. And I'm a little sad, and it's no fault of anyone on the show because it wasn't even on television, but maybe I'll send you the highlights from last night's match against Dundee, because yeah, you said the boys are rolling. They seem to be rolling now. 7-1 victors last night. So I'm hoping this match, the Motherwell match, is sort of a shift, a turn of the page from the recent not so great run of form. And you know, 2 points down from Rangers, obviously not insurmountable by any means. So it's looking like this is going to be a very exciting finish to the end of this particular campaign.
Fair enough. So we are at the hour plus minute here. I think that is a show.
Indeed, indeed. I believe it is, and it's going to be a blast next time out as we cover the first race of the F1 season.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Yep.
Can't wait.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it.
Yeah, we'll see how this whole thing unfolds. And with that, we will get gone.
All righty.
For executive producers, Richard Tanaka, Chris Lodici, Justin Fox, Brandy Fry, Bill Williamson, Tad Schunker. We have a lot of producers for this particular podcast. This has been Tackling the Chicane, copyright 2024. We will see you next time.